guest today is Lois Letchford, and her website is loisletchford.com, and I'm going to post that again in the chat room. And I do invite you to visit the chat room at spingola.chatango.com. And we were talking about Marjorie and about the exercises that you did, and I'm kind of familiar with those exercises where you put the child or the individual up on a table and you work with their arms and legs, but you say that was quite an experience that didn't really help. And what was the effect on your other two sons?
Nothing obvious, but I'm just aware that they were neglected while Nicholas was the center of attention, really.
Right.
I think that's the main thing.
The way that I'm familiar with that is I volunteered several years ago. There was a young woman, a college student, who was in a traffic accident. She was asleep in the back seat, and a car hit that side, and she had brain damage. And so we went over to her house. She had volunteers every morning, and we would move her arms and legs. But she was brain damaged. That's a totally different kind of situation than what Nicholas had.
Yes, so, but it's the same sort of theory, isn't it, behind it?
Right, right.
I wouldn't do that again.
No, but then I thought, oh, I wonder what swimming, the swimming would have been similar to that in that he was using his arms and legs. But I think the teacher was more of a factor with his swimming success. Don't you?
The teacher was definitely a factor with his swimming success. He was absolutely wonderful. And most the teachers, you know, would sit Nicholas on the side and my heart would sink. And Rob Cusack came along and said, I'll look after you, Nicholas. And he was just wonderful. You know, and he was very experienced. And he had a passion for teaching these children who struggled.
Right.
And it made a difference. Yeah. Yeah, he was phenomenal. I've been in touch with him.
Have you really?
Yes.
Oh, that's terrific. So he's still around?
Yes, he's finished coaching, but he's still around and he's doing more traveling now.
That's wonderful. And I remember the one story in the book where he wanted Nicholas to swim the entire length of the pool. And then Nicholas said, well, if you could stand in the middle, then I could do this. And which showed the trust that Nicholas had in his wonderful teacher. And when he was having trouble about breathing, okay, which side do I breathe? And and Nicholas is ambidextrous?
Yes.
Yes. And so he drew a little dot on his hand, and he said, okay, when you see that hand, then you'll know to raise your head and take a breath or something to that nature. How creative and intuitive.
Yes.
So, yeah. And they named that that swimming pool after him, after the teacher?
Yes, well, he was an Olympic swimmer.
Yes, he.
Yes, he went to the 1968 Olympics and swam the 100 meters freestyle and butterfly.
Right. Yes.
Amazing.
But that didn't make him the great teacher. That I look at him as a teacher more than as an Olympic.
Olympian.
I agree.
He's absolutely wonderful. He was so patient, and when he asked Nicholas to swim the length of the pool, it was just change over time for swim lessons, so Nicholas was the only one in the pool, but the pool deck was crowded with two lots of swimmers, those that were coming and those that are leaving, and everyone stopped and watched Nicholas swim the length of the pool.
And how did that affect Nicholas?
Oh, he was so excited. Everyone cheered for me, Nana. Everyone cheered for me.
Yes, he called his grandmother and told her that.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. So exciting. Yeah.
What did you learn from Bob that helped you to do what you did?
My eldest son said, Mum, he was so important because he showed you that there were ways around the problem. And it was important that Nicholas could achieve like every other child. It just took a different route. And I think that was a very important learning lesson for me right there and then.
Yes, I agree. I think that he was inspired. He inspired you and he inspired Nicholas. And I think Nicholas, he grew. He grew emotionally and his confidence grew. And what a wonderful experience that gave to him.
Yes.
That he knew that he could accomplish something. Because he did accomplish it, and other people saw him accomplish it, and instead of being looked at as, oh, he's dumb as a brick, he was a wonderful swimmer, and everybody saw that he was a wonderful swimmer. Ah, what a glorious moment.
Yes, it was. It was. Yeah.
Yeah. So. Okay, so... So tell us more about what you did, how you worked with this wonderful human being, Nicholas.
Well, the Oxford component, you know, when I started writing these poems, it changed the classroom first up. Nicholas wasn't failing. I was doing more reading too. And basically I was immersing him in language, but it was language he could understand. You're doing different sorts of language, and we always illustrating these poems. And Nicholas loved it. And through that, I fell into, you know, you come up with the double O, comes up as a group of letters you have to learn, and that's got cook, look, and book. And here we are sitting in Oxford, and I wrote this poem about Captain Cook, the last of the great explorers. And Nicholas and I went on a search for these maps, and it actually was the most unbelievable experience that Nicholas, again, still remembers. He loves mapping, loves history, and loves exploring, and it blew my mind then, and it still blows my mind now.
That is very amazing. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Tapping into a child's curiosity, but it was through the poem so that you can doing the decoding and finding rhyming words and giving all this phonemic awareness within the language that we need to teach them to read. And it was just astounding what happened. And so we're looking for maps, and Nicholas asked me, can I see Captain Cook's original maps, which I knew didn't come from a child with a low IQ. And then he said, and who came before Captain Cook? Well, I said, well, that's Christopher Columbus. And who came before Columbus? And I sat there and said, I don't know. Let's find out. And eventually, through going to the library, and I had to do a lot of reading to find out what was happening, we came up with this name Ptolemy, and Ptolemy did the first mapping of the world back in about 250 AD, and I said, Nicholas, we should be able to find the Ptolemy maps. We go to the Bodleian Library, which is, you know, a huge library, but they have a bookshop attached to it, and I went to the Gestot lady and said, where would we see the Ptolemy maps? And the lady reached down behind the counter, picked up this big volume of maps, put it on the table and said, and that'll be £5, please.
Wow.
And we walked out of the Bodleian Library with a book of Ptolemy maps, and Nicholas ruled, because they were accurate enough to recognize the countries. And I mean, the accuracy of them for that day was phenomenal. But then you can compare what we know today with what was being drawn then. And Nicholas just had a ball, and he literally drooled over those maps. So that was where his interest in mapping and the world history and all of it all started.
Wow. So what you were doing was really homeschooling, and
yes,
and you were tuning into his needs, and
yeah,
and only a person who is homeschooling their child would have the interest and the love of that child to be able to understand what would encourage and provoke further knowledge. What an adventure. Oh, my goodness.
Yes. And, you know, you've got a seven-year-old. No way in the world would you do the history of world mapping with most children.
Of course not.
It was the perfect subject. It still amazes me that, you know, he just fell in love with learning alongside learning to read. So you've got the two things going on together, and it makes a difference when you come to do the more difficult stuff of the decoding, which he really struggled with. But even then, I was given a book in England that just transformed my life and teaching and learning and all the rest of it. And it just suited Nicholas's needs, and it gave him the steps he needed to really take on learning in full.
Ah, that is wonderful. That is absolutely wonderful. And
yes.
Oh, what other things? Tell us some more stories about other interests that developed as a result of your homeschooling of your child.
The mapping was the huge one. The interest in history was another one. Building. He started with connects there. We would buy a packet of cereal, and in this cereal, they gave us free Connects packets. Now, do you know Connects building blocks at all?
No, I'm not, but there are other building blocks that are probably similar.
Yes,
but I'm not familiar with those.
Connects is very special in that it's rods and they have connectors.
Uh-huh.
And so you can build, once you've got a few of them, you can build anything. And that was the start of Nicholas just zooming with, I need more connects, I need more connects.
Oh, my goodness.
And that was just amazing. Yeah, yeah. And the other thing, we bought a Nintendo there. We had a Nintendo in Australia. We bought this cheap one in England to fill their time, and they were quite new on the market then. And I remember Nathaniel, my eldest son, zooming through these programs, boom, 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 going through. And I remember watching Nicholas one day, and Nicholas didn't zoom through it. He sat there and blocked out every brick on the screen. And with that, he found things that the eldest didn't find.
Oh, my gosh.
I found this. Yes.
Oh,
yes,
my goodness.
It was just amazing to see the difference and see how methodical he was about it. And because he was methodical, he reached the end and he could give Nathaniel skills and keys that he needed to go on to various other levels.
Isn't that amazing? Oh,
yes.
That is just amazing. Mm-hmm. And he never, never would have had these wonderful experiences in the public school system. Ever.
Well, in any school system. No school
right.
system would cater for that, really. That was Nicholas, as you say, is an incredibly different child. He's very special, and I needed that time at home to work with him, and I needed to do it one on one, me and him, and have no one else around, because he is slower with his thinking with language, and he needed quiet. And if the younger brother was there, it was very hard to work with the two of them, because Nicholas takes time to think with language. So when my mother-in-law was there, it was a huge help mm-hmm. with his learning so that we could work in a quiet environment.
Mm-hmm. And there are that brings up another issue with any public school. I recall that when we moved from what was considered the city to the suburbs. Now, in the school that I was going to, you had to raise your hand. It was very quiet. You couldn't talk unless you raised your hand and was called upon. And then in the middle of the fifth grade, we transferred. We moved out to the suburbs. And the classroom was totally different. It was very noisy. There was a lot of it was harder to think. And there's a lot of stimulation in classrooms now. You walk in and there's these blasts of color and signs and noise and children getting up out of their desks and talking. And to me, I need quiet to think.
Yes, Nicholas needs quiet. Nicholas very much needs quiet. Even to hear the teacher's directions. You know, this became interesting, you know, that you have to get their attention. The teacher has to get the child's attention before they talk. Otherwise, they're coming into the sentence in the middle of it.
Right.
And the teacher might say, get out the, you know, your English book. And he might only hear book.
Right.
And what did she say? I don't know. So having the second and third grade teachers, you know, second and third grade teachers in Australia were utterly brilliant. And he still talks about Mrs. Raspaskowski, his third grade teacher. And he's been back to see her. He loved her so much.
Really?
Yes. She was brilliant. And she encouraged a love of learning as well and saw his strength. So, yes, and he went back to see her just before he graduated.
Really? Was she happy to see him?
Oh, over the moon. Delighted, yes. Yeah. And she loved the chapter about her.
That is just terrific. And I think that many people go into teaching because they do love children and they do want to instill a love of learning in children. But I don't find that with some teachers they shouldn't be in that occupation. If you don't love children and if you don't love teaching children, and actually I think that providing information so that children can learn, I think there's a difference.
Yes.
That you don't actually teach children. You provide an environment where they can learn, because that's when they remember and experience what they are doing, which is what you provided. You provided an environment, and he learned from what you provided.
That's right. That's exactly right. We cannot teach children anything. We can only help them make all the connections they need to get the information they had. And I think that was originally Galileo.
Yes.
I think it's one of the quotes in my book too.
Yes.
Yeah. Wow. Fascinating, isn't it? How we've got to provide so much so that they can make the connections they need to make so that they can learn to read.
Right. And your use of poetry, poetry has a rhythm which would resonate with Nicholas, correct?
Yes, and it resonates with all of my students. I don't know if you finished my book.
Tell us about your...
I then...
Okay, we are going to a quick three-minute break, and then we'll talk about your other students.
Okay.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. with all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, no child left behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing, knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AirOutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magpul clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AirOutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AirOutfitting.com.
It starts with you and me. It starts with you and me. We all can be heroes if we take the lead.
All righty, we are back. We are back, and our guest is Lois Letchford, and her website is loisletchford.com, and she is the author of Reversed, a memoir. Available anywhere that books are sold, and I think it's a must read for anyone that has anything to do with children. Anyway, you had, after your wonderful experience, setting up an environment where Nicholas could learn the way that he was able to process information and appreciate it and grow and accelerate and do all the wonderful things that he did and become immersed in so many various things that never would have happened in a classroom. But after that, you taught other students. So tell us about some of your experiences.
Well, after that, after I saw Nicholas be so successful and I fell in love with teaching children like him, I went back and got my certification to become a reading teacher, and that became critical. And then we moved to Lubbock, Texas, and the first student I met was a 13-year-old, or I met a mother whose 13-year-old had spent 4 years in a phonics-only reading program, and he came out non-reading. And the school district... Yes, he was the first one, and the school district employed me to teach him and then other students. And my next students were 15-year-olds, and they could not read the words, make a fist and do it. He read, one boy read Maker first and knew that wasn't right, but didn't know what to do to get that, understand that sentence. And the second boy couldn't even read those words. And they left with me 3 years later, and one was reading on a fourth grade reading level and the other on a third grade reading level. And phenomenal, and I'm in touch with one of them still.
Marvelous. And these children, if you cannot read in America, you're very disadvantaged. You're going to end up, you could end up in prison.
Anyway. Yes. And it's fascinating you say that, because one was an African-American boy, the 15-year-old, and eventually we did a unit on volcanoes volcanoes and earthquakes. And so this was 10 years ago when the tsunami in Indonesia happened. It was quite significant. And at the end of that segment, my 15-year-old said to me, I didn't know such a thing as volcanoes existed. And those words, they were his words.
Oh, my goodness.
They are, yes, embedded in my mind, because it's what happens when you don't learn to read. You don't learn anything else either. And that's equally problematic.
Exactly. You have to read in order to learn anything about anything else, history, or biography, or you know, people's biographies, so you can look at what other people have done, or geography, so you know what the world consists of, or like natural disasters, volcanoes,
anything.
Yes.
Yeah.
Reading is your vehicle to the rest of
the world.
Learning. The rest of learning.
Yeah. So that's what I remember about my 15-year-olds and my 13-year-old. You know, again, I taught him just the love of learning alongside reading. And one of the things that was most important for both these was to do readers' theatres plays, so that you're reading something and having to practice it to put it on publicly. And you need all the props, you need the setting, you need to do all of these things. And that was exciting for everyone, and scary and nerve-wracking, but brilliant, brilliant.
Yes, because you're putting more effort into other things that relate to the reading experience they've had.
Yes, and you're having to practice. You have to practice. You don't want to feel like an idiot.
But it feels like it's more playful. It feels like it's an extracurricular kind of a thing, a bonus.
Yes. For both groups, for all of my students, it's one of my ways of showing them what reading is all about. Because it's, you know, we think that reading is just about decoding, and these children can't do that. But the students I taught, now they, if you put them on an axis, an XY axis of age, chronological age on one axis and reading age on another, mine are at the lowest point possible. They are reading on a first and second grade reading level. In fact, they were non-readers. So it becomes important to do the plays. What I was saying was their failure was that they hadn't even worked out that reading is a meaningful exercise.
Oh, my goodness. All righty, we are going to take a quick break. And we should take some phone calls from our listeners. We'll be right back.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Many people write us about their experience with Extendivite. Allow me to read you some from Amazon.com. It really does work like the review says it does. I cannot believe that after the first few days, I didn't feel as sluggish or clogged up. It has had a profound impact on my physical, emotional well-being. I'm skeptical as most people about products and their claims, and I never write reviews, but this is a wonderful product and I recommend it to everyone. Great product. It has brought my blood pressure from the mid-150s over the 80s to the mid-130s over mid-80s. Along with diet and exercise in just the past couple of months. Excellent. Thank you, David. Tell us your story. Get Extendivite today. Call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Reaching for a dream of peace to break the madness.
You know the answer, so simple to find.
Well, we are back, and our guest is Lois Letchford. Her website is loisletchford.com. And in your teaching with your students, you felt that technology was also something that they should be familiar with and be able to use it. Now, if you can't read, then you really don't have a lot of use for a computer unless you just watch videos or something like that. But even then, you really do need to be familiar with it. And so tell us about some of the experiences you had with technology and how you used it.
At the time, my eldest son would have been, you know, same age as the students I was teaching, 15, 16, 17. Now, my son sitting in our house with a computer typing at 200 words a minute or something ridiculous, my students didn't even have an email address.
Wow.
And so you had this technological divide on top of a literacy divide. And so then I had to teach them how to use a computer, how to set up an email, send an email and receive it, all of those things. They all must be taught as well as learning to read. So that was the first thing I had to do with my students. Some of students are not as bad as that, but when you grow up non-reading. And those boys both went to school every day for 10 years.
Oh.
Yes.
And they came out?
No, they were difficult. They,
sure.
They came out, yeah, they were difficult to teach. There's no question about it. And I'm not blaming the schools and I'm not blaming the teachers, because we don't give the teachers time or the tools to teach these who are so difficult, who don't get it the first or second time round. Mm-hmm. That's why the children fail.
And there's so much of that, particularly in certain areas. It seems like the teachers' union is more important than the students. It's really sad.
And well, I think it's the problem is bigger than that.
Mm-hmm.
That Nicholas, you know, sits on the absolute extremes of our society. People don't have the time to deal with him. And the one person that did, the reading teacher, she didn't have the skills. And that comes down to a mindset. This child is not particularly smart and they have to do it this way. And it's changing and challenging that mindset more than anything else. And when I talk now to teachers,
right,
one of the first things I get them to do is, tell me about a child in your class or in your reading group who's really struggling. Tell me what you think about that child.
Mm.
And then at the end of the day, I want you, we'll come back and we'll look at, now what can you do for this child? Because mindset, the way we think about the child and about ourselves, is critical in how we approach the teaching of reading to them.
And children who have developed other skills are able to, they are empathic, and they can read, they can feel how people think of them, or what people think of them.
Yes. Yes, they do. They certainly do. And, you know, with my 15-year-olds and even the 13-year-olds, you've got failure upon failure upon failure. So when I come in, and I've spoken to both of these boys in the last year or two, they've both said, I didn't think that she would be able to help me. Or, and one boy, my first student, Christian, said, I don't know how big a task she thinks she can take on. I don't think I can do this. And so as a teacher, you really have to work with their attitude of, I can't do this. No one else has been able to do it. What are you going to do differently? How is she going to approach this differently to make an impact that is positive?
Right.
There's a lot in that, isn't there?
Yes. But it's really true.
Yes.
Oh, what a sad situation.
And they all turned around, and it's fascinating to hear them talk about something, an event that happened, you know, 15 or so years ago. And they don't remember the particulars, but they say they remember the feeling in our classroom that with me it was all okay, and there was a trust between us, and that they eventually, she's going to help me, I can do this, and how that transformed their whole learning. Because my first student, Christian, he left high school with a degree, and then he went on to Texas Christian, and he got an honors degree in communication.
That's terrific. That is really terrific. And when he came into your classroom,
mm-hmm.
he knew
he was non-reading.
And he would have.
And I know he was non-reading because I had him read a book that I use regularly with students, and he missed out the important pronoun of he in the sentence, and it totally changed the meaning of who did this on my head or something, and he missed out a word, and it totally lost the meaning of it, and he just plundered on. because he hadn't worked out that reading was meaningful exercise, and when it doesn't make sense, you've got to do something about it, and he hadn't worked that out.
Right.
So, yeah.
And you said that that it was like watching a child learn to walk.
Yes. It's so exciting when they finally get it.
Right. And what now if he hadn't learned to read, what would have become of him?
Oh, you cannot think, because it's not only the learning to read, as you say, it's the emotional state.
Right.
You know, unlike the child you were talking about who was playing up in class.
Right.
What happens when you have failed for so long? And really, that's all you know then, is failure.
Right.
How do you turn that around? I don't know, you know. So believe me, every day I give thanks that my son learned to read at 7.
Right.
Because it gave him a chance of just enjoying school every day after that. To be successful and know I can do this.
The other thing, too, is in the book you talk about, how can a non-reader even read signs on advertisements on the side of a bus?
Yes.
Or really enjoy or understand their environment when they can't read and they don't know what's going on? How do you relate to the world
if
you're a non-reader?
Yeah. I think it must be a very scary place.
Oh, indeed. Now, he liked to listen to books.
Yes.
So tell us about that.
Well, this is my extraordinary story, is that we moved from Brisbane, Australia to Lubbock, Texas, where my husband took a job. And Nicholas was 11. And because Lubbock, Texas, you know, is West Texas, it's flat, it's brown, it's boring, and people say there's not a hill or a tree to spoil the view, and you drive for miles on end. And the librarian said, here, listen to these books, listen to books on tape. And it transformed our driving and learning. And it transformed Nicholas's life again, another transformation, because you're hearing the language of your peers at the same rate as the peers.
Yes.
So it's language, it's story structure, it's characters, it's everything that you need to have to succeed. And we listen to the same book 2 or 3 times at a time.
Mm-hmm. And if they have the book in their hand and are listening to it being read, that's a wonderful thing, correct?
That was yes, that's right. The first experience was always just to listen
right.
and enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
And the second experience was then to come back and follow. And that was a really tough exercise, because Nicholas's reading speed at the time was so slow. And the audiobooks compensated for the slow reading speed. And it really helped him catch up with the reading speed too. So it's quite amazing, all the things that happened and have to happen to have children who are behind read on grade level.
Right. And sometimes the speed rate at which people read is very important, because many people read, when they're reading, they repeat each word in their head, which is not a great mm-hmm. thing to do unless you're deliberately trying to do that. But if you read too slow, sometimes you don't get the concept that you're reading about. And so there are different techniques. I took a speed reading in college, a mm-hmm. speed reading class. And we spent a lot of time on different techniques of reading instead of reading mm-hmm. one word at a time. You read a sentence at a time. And sometimes you get more from it. And also, if you don't repeat the word in your mind, you get more from it.
Yeah.
So there's all kinds of things that I'm sure that you've delved into in your teaching that that probably affect the person's understanding of what they're reading. Correct?
Yes, I didn't do much of that. It was far more important to me and my students that they read and comprehended.
Right.
And then the level that you're talking about, then Nicholas took that on himself.
Ah.
No. Yes.
Isn't
because
that
Nicholas
amazing?
Now reads. Yes. Yes. He reads everything. He reads fellow colleagues, PhD thesis. You know, he's reading academic papers across a wide range of fields, and he can do it all.
Aren't you proud of him?
Oh, I'm proud of his wife, too, because she's patient with him. And, she, you know, it's coming back to me through her, the discrepancy. She says at times, oh, Lois, he couldn't do it. And I was just shocked that this boy with a peer man with a PhD couldn't do
really?
These simple things. Yes. Yes. Well, she's a lawyer and she's a brilliant reader. And, you know, a fast reader and all the rest of it. So it's quite a contrast. And I think it's only as she lives with him on a day-to-day basis that she sees the big differences and she sees the amount of effort and work that he puts in to get to where he is.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, yes. But he reads everything. So, but my goal is to have children read for comprehension and to enjoy the reading experience because when you enjoy it, you will do more of it.
Oh, absolutely.
If it's painful, you say, oh, I can't do that.
Of course.
Like
nobody
reading,
wants... nobody
like
wants
reading
just...
Tolkien for me.
Like reading who?
Tolkien or Tolstoy for me.
Oh, yes.
Painful.
They're not too bad.
Well, we listened to Tolkien once. We did a trip, and we had Tolkien on the whole way, The Lord of the Rings.
Uh-huh.
And I remember just zoning out and not having a clue what was going on. And the boys are hanging on every word.
Well, because that's more fantasy and that kind of thing. But
yes.
Wouldn't you say that they would enjoy adventure?
Yes.
I don't know.
Yes, yes. And it's a, you know, it's a classic, isn't it, now? And they did. They loved it. But it lost me. It just lost me.
Yes.
So I want reading to be an enjoyable, a positive experience. That's the most important thing for me. The starting point, anyway.
Yes. And you've presented all over some of your theories and your methods of teaching reading. You've been able to present your ideas to other teachers and have been instrumental in them in those teachers developing programs that would help their students, correct?
Yes, yes.
Now, I know you don't like to
pat
yourself on the back.
Well, you know, to me, there's so much that goes on in reading that we don't see. We just make assumptions. And when you teach these children who are sitting down the bottom, you've got to get everything right. You can't make any assumptions about anything. And that's what I tell my teachers. And I give examples of how this works. And then they go back and go, ah, I can do this, this, and this. So, yes, and I'm actually going on a tour of Queensland. This is my last weekend in the States for a month.
Wow.
I'm going back to my home for my mum and dad's 70th wedding anniversary next Saturday.
How wonderful.
Yes. And then after that, I am talking at some libraries, but I'm also talking with a group called Spelled, which is learning difficulties. And I'm talking in four regional centres of the state about teaching. So that'll be great fun. I'm really looking forward to all of this. Next month. And then I'm talking at the Ireland International Conference on Education in April. And where else am I going? I'm going to Kansas. I'm going to talk in Kansas to the school district, to the reading teachers in the school district in Kansas.
Derby, wonderful.
Yeah.
You go back to Australia, I wonder if any of the teachers that Nicholas had would be attending your presentation. Wouldn't that be interesting? Wouldn't it be interesting if Susan was there? Okay, we will be right back in just 3 minutes. Be right back.
Did you know that neither the American Medical Association nor the American Bar Association were established to benefit the American people? Have you recognized that in our country, health care has little to do with health, and that our court system has nothing to do with justice? The priests of both medicine and law have been incentivized to implement a dark agenda on behalf of the Bilderbergers and their ilk. To protect ourselves and our progeny, we need to take a much closer look at how these two giant industries really work. Join me, Al Whitney, on In Defense of Humanity, Saturdays at 7 p.m. Central, as we expose the matrix and learn how not to consent to our own destruction. Did you know that neither the American Medical Association nor the American Bar Association were established to benefit the American people? Have you recognized that in our country, health care has little to do with health, and that our court system has nothing to do with justice? The priests of both medicine and law have been incentivized to implement a dark agenda on behalf of the Bilderbergers and their ilk. To protect ourselves and our progeny, we need to take a much closer look at how these two giant industries really work. Join me, Al Whitney, on In Defense of Humanity, Saturdays at 7 p.m. Central, as we expose the matrix and learn how not to consent to our own destruction.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Deanna, and we will take your phone calls at 800-313-9443. What is your feeling about, you've referenced it just briefly, about the number of days that children attend school during the year? Now, it used to be that people in an agrarian society where there was farm work to be done, that children had 3 months off of school, which seems now would interrupt the educational process, and they would have to really work harder come September whenever they go back to school. What is your feeling on that?
society, our society has changed and schooling has changed. But see, I grew up in Australia where we only have a maximum of 6 weeks off. And more breaks throughout the year. So teaching is a job that is done 12 months of the year, basically. But you're right. I think 3 months off is too long, particularly when children are then not exposed to any literature during that time.
Right.
And here's, you know, a possibility of wealth distribution. The rich will have their children in every summer program and exposed to everything, which is fantastic for them. And those that can't afford it, what happens? You know, it's a very interesting problem that has to be addressed, I think.
That is a consideration to factor in. In your teaching with Nicholas, you said that you used short, simple poems. And you also use these with Pedro and Twain. Let me just share one. Or would you like to share it? A tip, top, tap?
Yes, you do it. You've got it open.
A tip, Grandma. Top, tap. Tip, top, tap. Grandma bought a cat. Did she buy an old cat? Did she buy a wise cat? No, she bought a big, fat black cat. And Twain smiled. One of your students smiled and said, I can write a poem like that. And he does.
Yes.
What a great way of appealing to a child. A great example. And it's simple enough
this poem with a number of children. And you think, it's nothing profound in that. And the children love it. And they come back. And even changing one word changes the author. Now, and with my other students, it'll be by Miss Lois Ann. And so it's fascinating that the children love that one. And then once they have written it, they come back to it and reread it again and again and again, which is what you want for poetry and for reading.
And because they have pride in what they've accomplished, right?
Yes, exactly.
Fabulous.
Yeah.
Okay, we're at the top of the hour, and we do invite your phone calls when we get back. Be right back.
People tell us about their experience with Extendivite. Just listen to what Glenn has to say.
Prior to taking it, I had diabetic neuropathy. The Extendivite reduced that significantly. Acid reflux was reduced. I had athlete's foot, very severe. Trimmed that down to about 75%. Dandruff, almost completely gone. I had occipital neuralgia at the base of my skull. I was having migraines, reduced by about 90%. Heart palpitations, my heart would kind of stall out. I would skip a beat. Very uncomfortable. And when walking from downstairs going to sleep, by the time I got to the bedroom, which is just one flight of stairs, my heart was pounding, coming out of my chest. My vision was blurry. This completely solved that problem. Great product. Thanks.
Tell us your story. Get Extendivite today. Call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Listening to Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.